I think compliance reasons scare a lot of people. I think people are very frightened of technology that's not FDA approved. I think people find that that's a barrier, and it shouldn't be. People should be able to access the non-FDA approved technology. You're going to have to do the same validation anyway when you're internally validating it. And the College of American Pathologists gives you really good resources. I mean, they basically tell you, you know, step by step what you need to do in order to produce a validation that's considered acceptable, which is, you know, it's just like any other laboratory test. I think that just knowing that there are options out there that aren't FDA approved, and that the internal validation that you're going to have to do is going to be exactly the same, whether it's FDA approved or not FDA approved. So really, you know, like, if you think the technology is good, then it's good enough, right?
Learn about the newest digital pathology trends in science and industry, meet the most interesting people in the niche, and gain insights relevant to your own projects. Here is where pathology meets computer science. You are listening to the Digital Pathology Podcast with your host, Dr. Alexandra Zhurov.
Welcome, my digital pathology trailblazers. Today, my guest is Dr. Elizabeth Plocharczyk, and she is a pathologist at Ithaca, New York. She's affiliated with multiple hospitals, and she is a true digital pathology trailblazer. So recently, Digital Pathology Place started working with a new partner, Smart in Media. And when I was in conversations with them, I was just asking, oh, who is using your camera? Just to understand better what you can do with it. And they told me, you need to talk to Dr. Plocharczyk. And so I reached out to Beth and asked about her digital pathology journey. And today I'm honored to have her as a guest on the podcast. And I'm so excited to have you share, Beth, because you have such a non-standard digital pathology journey. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate the invitation.
We are going to start with you, with your background and what your pathology practice looked like before digital pathology was part of it.
Sure. So I'm a community hospital pathologist. I practice in Ithaca, New York, like you mentioned. I'm anatomic and clinical pathology boarded, also boarded in dermatopathology and clinical informatics. So I do have an interest in technology use in medicine. But for the first approximate decade of my practice, I hadn't used any digital pathology tools. I had a pretty standard practice. Mostly surgical specimens, biopsies, excisions, cytology, some autopsies, medical direction of laboratories, pretty standard run-of-the-mill community hospital pathology.
So you have a lot of specialties, and were you using them enough before digital pathology? It's kind of a side question because you were boarded in informatics and you said that 10 years you were not doing any digital pathology.
Right. Mostly my informatics training I was using for things having to do with data flow in medicine and making sure, building interfaces with other practices. I have a pretty active outreach practice because of my dermatopathology mm-hmm. practice. So I do service a lot of clients all over the state who are dermatologists. And there are lots of heterogeneous medical record systems that we had to get our medical record system to be able to talk to. And so mostly my informatics up to that point was having to do with interoperability.
So you kind of, with this background, you were set for success. Because digital pathology also is just part of, you know, a different ecosystem that goes into it. But when did you decide to go digital? When was the point where you said, okay, it's time to go digital? And was it just for certain areas? Or how did you do it? And how did you know that digital was the way?
Right. So after about 10 years of practice, I found myself in a one-person practice. Normally, my practice was a two-person practice. And then I found myself working alone. And I found, you know, having to do all of the work with one person, it was very challenging to be able to be in multiple places at once. And even just simple things like you know, scheduling a dentist appointment or, you know, taking some time to do some gardening at home. It was very challenging to be able to have the time and ability to be able to do those things. And so I decided actually during the pandemic, it was in 2020, that it was time to go digital. And I remember the moment that I decided it was time. I was doing a proficiency test on the College of American Pathologists website, and it was a proficiency test in flow cytometry. And I remember looking at the images of the peripheral smear or the aspirate smear, and it was the quality of the images was just excellent. The usability was easy. I was able to navigate the image and zoom in and zoom out without a lot of fuss. And I just remember this being a big change from what I remember digital imaging being when I was in residency. And so I thought, you know, this is a tool that can help me in my practice. And by that point, I was getting socialized to things like remote work because of pandemic, being able to do meetings online, having other, you know, people that didn't have to be in the hospital could not be in the hospital with the pandemic and remote work. And so I think just a confluence of factors fell together. Also at the same time, because of the pandemic, we had been doing a lot of COVID testing. And because COVID testing wasn't available, we had to develop it ourselves. And so we had to use the laboratory developed testway pathway in New York State to be able to do this sort of testing. And that put in my mind, well, if we're using laboratory developed testing for COVID, why not use it for digital pathology? So all of those factors just came together and I decided it was time and that I needed to do it to be able to maintain my practice as a one-person practice or even as a two-person practice because times have changed so much.
Yeah, two-person practice is not a huge practice either. No. Okay, so you decide to go digital. Can you describe like what was impossible before you went digital when you were just one person? Like what would you run into? Like how many places did you have to drive to? How long was the drive? And like when did you realize, hey, it cannot continue like that?
Right. So I would say that there were certain aspects of my practice that very much geographically located me within the hospital. And mm-hmm. one of those was frozen sections. If you have a frozen section and it's 6 o'clock and you want to go home and eat dinner, you can't really do that if you're waiting for that frozen section, unless you have some sort of technology to be able to extend your reach. The second application that really tied me to the hospital was on-site adequacy assessment for cytology specimens. We do a lot of ROES in our hospital, rapid on-site examination and evaluation to triage cytology specimens for FNAs that are happening in radiology or in the OR, for EBISes, for example. So I would say that there were several of those cases per day. And I also needed to be in two different hospitals. and so sometimes I would find myself driving.
How far were they from?
Yeah, we live in a rural area. And I'd be driving to the other hospital. And then I'd get a call saying, we have a frozen section. And so it would be problematic. I needed to be able to be in multiple places at once. I needed to be able to go home sometimes. So those were the two indications that really tied me to the hospital. And then there was a third indication that really tied me to the area, and that was dermatopathology. So mm-hmm. being a dermatopathologist, I mentioned before that I have an outreach business and a clientele of dermatologists all over the state. And dermatologists are very particular. They like 24-hour turnaround time. And, you know, up until this time, you know, for the previous decade before I had digital pathology, I'd actually not left Ithaca on vacation because I was so committed to giving them their 24-hour turnaround time. And, you know, the only way that I could have done that before was being physically present in the place where the slides were. But because it's not a huge part of my business, it's not so burdensome to be able to do an hour or two of sign out of just the DermPath cases, you know, while I'm on vacation. But on vacation before was previously, you know, gardening leave in my own yard. But then I thought, wow, you know, if I had digital pathology and whole slide imaging, I could sign out these cases, you know, from France, maybe, or from somewhere else. So that was my third use case that really got me thinking about basically geographically untethering me from the region.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a super powerful, something that, I don't know, is not that highlighted because it's more connected with the pathologist well-being and with the pathologist being able to do their job rather than patients, right? It's on the pathologist's side to have a certain quality of life or to have a certain flexibility. And what I'm hearing then, okay, if you didn't have digital pathology, it would, and you would still be on your own. Are you still on your own? Or do you
it took me 14 months, though, to recruit another pathologist. And that's another factor that was a huge, player into this decision was, the recruitment environment now still, but even especially in 2021 when I was recruiting, was very challenging, very difficult. There's a huge shortage of pathologists, and we're all expected now to do more and to stretch ourselves even further. So we just need the tools to be able to make ourselves even more efficient and to extend ourselves as far as we can to work at the tops of our licenses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So without the tools, you would probably have to cut the number of patients, because I don't know, not be able to serve so much. How many hospitals are you affiliated with?
Two hospitals, multiple physician offices. And then we also run the medical examiner program for the county. It's a rural area, so you kind of have to be a jack of all trades in this area. It's one of those things where if you didn't have, if you couldn't do it, it couldn't get done. Or there'd be delays or things out. And
totally. It's not the scenario with, I cannot work with this pathologist, then I'm going to go to another one. There is no other one, right?
Yeah.
Yes. So, okay. So you identified a couple of areas where digital pathology would be a game changer. How did you choose the right tools?
Yeah.
When you were looking into tech, how did you pick what to go with? And yeah, did you check a lot of systems or did you have recommendations? How did you go about it?
Yeah. So, I mean, the first thing that you do is you determine your use cases. So those were my use cases. Rapid on-site assessment for cytology, frozen sections, and dermatopathology. So I knew I needed relatively low throughput technology. I didn't need something that was going to be scanning, 200 slides at a time. I was looking for something that had I was looking for whole slide imaging capacity and live view capacity, because I figured that for the rapid on-site adequacy assessment, live view would probably be meet my needs better. And then I decided on a lot of people go for live view for frozen sections, but I decided to do whole slide imaging for frozen sections as well as for dermatopathology. So I was looking for a few different types of technology. I was looking, budget was a huge constraint for me because, I'm a single solo practitioner. So I set a budget and those were the main two, functional specifications that I had. Is it had to meet my budget, it had to meet my use cases, and then it also had to be easy to use. Like I needed technology that, like I mentioned before, I'm often called when I'm driving from one hospital to another. If the technology was going to tie me to a computer, it wasn't going to be functional for me. I needed it to work on a tablet, which, I can take pretty much anywhere with me. And so I needed to be able to like pull over to the side of the road and pull something up on a tablet to be able to make, make decisions rapidly off of that. I wanted to be able to use it easily on the tablet. I didn't want to have to log into another system
and then
pretend like I was
VPN
using the mouse.
And
I wanted to use my finger and, move the image with my finger. I wanted to pinch to make it bigger. I wanted to pinch to make it smaller. So that was pretty critical functionality to me. So I think it's really important to define your functional specifications that you have in order to make sure that the technical specifications meet the functional specifications.
So you say a lot of people go for live view for frozen section, but you decided to go for whole slide imaging. Why did you decide? And did you have any problems with that?
Yeah.
What's the reason why people do live view for that?
There are lots of systems out there for frozen sections with the trundle that you can manually move from afar. I was priced out of those types of systems. Mm-hmm. For the live view that I was using for cytology, the cytotech would be moving the slide. And so the mm-hmm. cytotech has, some idea, cytotech knows what they're looking at. And so I could say, oh, hey, stop at that, that group of cells over at 3 o'clock and go in there. I could be having that conversation with the cytotech. But with the Frozen section, being the only pathologist, I would pretty much be the only one that be knowing what's being looked at. And I would feel less mm-hmm. comfortable telling, a histotech on the other side, oh, hey, stop on that thing that looks kind of square and, move over there. And,
yeah.
So that was one reason. And then the price was another. And then the third reason was because, I was getting, this was my first foray into whole slide imaging. And I mm-hmm. wanted to sort of push it to see what could I do with whole slide imaging. I wanted to also have a little more value for the investment that I was making in the whole slide imaging, rather than just for when I occasionally wanted to go on vacation and out of the area and wanted to read those germ path slides. So I wanted to be able to get a little more value for my money. So that was the reason that I decided for whole slide imaging for the frozen section use case.
And the quality is good enough, right?
Quality is excellent. I'm really impressed by the quality of, very affordable scanners and the time that it takes to scan is not prohibitive. It's working out, very well, even for that intraoperative setting.
So I know a frozen section images only from this, there's a data set, TCGA, the Cancer Genome Atlas. They have a bunch of slides, and several of them are frozen sections. In general, frozen sections are not as beautiful as FFPE samples, but they're not going to be more beautiful on glass.
Right.
It's not that a scanner is making those sections more ugly. They just are like this, and you have to work with it.
Right.
So
you just get what you get.
Right. And the scanning doesn't make it any worse. So, okay, going back to the budget, how did you, if it's okay for you, can you tell us what your budget was for this whole setup? Yeah. And then we're going to dive into what you bought for this money. But first, what was the budget and how did you come up that this was a reasonable budget for you that is not going to like put you out of business or put you deep into debt?
Right. So I was practicing alone at this point. So I did have a little bit of flexibility because I wasn't paying another pathologist to be doing work. So I basically just set a budget that was $75,000. I thought, for $75,000, I should be able to get a solution or several solutions that will, meet my needs and meet my use cases. I also didn't want to dive really. I didn't have more money than that to spend. That was the top of my budget. And then two, I was thought, this is my initial foray into digital pathology. So I mean, it would have been nice if I had a lot more money to spend, but, just knowing that that this was my initial foray into it, I thought, okay, well, that's a reasonable budget to set to be able to meet my needs, especially since my needs were low throughput. If my mm-hmm. needs were higher throughput, I think that would have been a little more challenging. If my needs were to completely transform my workflow, but they weren't, I just had these special use cases just to get me out of the hospital for very certain things that were absolutely tying me to the hospital.
Okay. So what did you decide to get and where did you distribute these devices?
Right. So my evaluation process basically was see what's out there. I did internet searches and, mm-hmm. and looked in, resources like CAP Today and just to see what was out there. I started contacting vendors and just talking to people, asking questions, asking, how much their devices cost and And, you know, I was very quickly dissuaded from many products because of my budget to be able to meet all of my use cases. Actually, the vendors were very helpful. Even some of the vendors for the large FDA-approved devices that that I was not able to access because of budget, you know, they actually would point me into other directions and say, "Hey, you should call this vendor. They have some really nice products for, you know, for somebody like you who's looking for something much smaller." And so that's kind of how it happened. I just evaluated lots of different scanners. I ended up buying two whole slide imagers and one live view scanner, and the software platform that I've been using for the whole slide imaging. And so the two whole slide imagers I chose were, it was a Motic six slide imager and a Grendium Ocus 20 one slide imager. This one. I liked the fact that I could have two of these scanners, so I'd have some redundancy. If one of them went down, I'd be able to use the other. I also just kind of, you know, being informatics boarded and kind of like tech nerd, I just wanted to play with the technology. I thought it was really interesting and really cool. And, you know, the scanners, they were affordable. You know, the Motic, it was somewhere, it was under $30,000. The Grendium was under $15,000. And the live view camera that I ended up getting was from the Spartan Media. It was their product for live view. And one of the reasons that I also ended up going with the live view is because they also had a very nice web application, that was available and also in my price range. They had one that's not in my price range, but they also had one that was in my price range. For just, you know, scanning, like to be able to store images on a cloud-based platform, to be able to, you know, access them, log in and look at them and move them around on an iPad with your finger and determine what was going on. So I wasn't able, you know, at this stage of the game to do things like, interfacing with our medical record system or lots more sophisticated things that I hope to someday be able to do with digital pathology. But this was just, you know, this is just getting my feet wet.
Yeah, I like that you say that vendors were helpful. And I'm seeing this a lot more in this digital pathology space. They really want to help. And also they have, especially for people who are new to what's out there, they have already served some people. And they know the use cases. They know why people went with a certain system and didn't go with another one. And they can very quickly point you in the right direction. So, yeah, I like that a lot. Question. Where is the Grendium located, the Motic, and where's the live view?
Right. So right now,
because Grendium, I'm looking at your microscope, but there is nothing.
No, there's nothing. So the Grendium is actually going to eventually live here. This is my home office. Mm-hmm. I have a home office and a hospital office. But right now it's still being validated for one of my use cases. And so I'm validating it in the hospital. It's living right next to the Motic scanner. Motic lives in the hospital. And then.
So their bodies right now.
Right. So when the, you know, wherever the slides are being made so that they can be scanned by technical personnel. And then the idea with the Grendium is that, if I'm signing out at home and, you know, my second pathologist is in the hospital and we're in different places, I could quickly scan something to him so he could see it as well and, you know, weigh in on it. And that way we don't have to do our usual thing of, hey, what do you think of that?
Putting the phone to the microscope and trying to catch
the very first digital pathology.
Right? I remember when the first cameras came out, I was still in vet school. And it was the first time because when we learned histology and then later pathology, we had to draw these pictures. And like we had a special workbook with circles. Half of the circle was either a picture or already a drawing. And then we had to look under the microscope. And then at some point, somebody had the first digital camera and we were exactly trying to capture anything from the ocular with the digital camera. That was an interesting exercise. I mean, you some people I see on social media, they get decent pictures.
Maybe if I do it, yeah.
I just don't have the patience or like the dexterity to do it. I have a specific adapter for this. Mm-hmm. I have the smart in media as well. Okay, yeah. So another question regarding the equipment. Mm-hmm. How long have you had it already?
Let's see. It's been almost three years. 3 years.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. And how long did it take you to pick everything, validate, like from the day where you said, enough, I need digital pathology, to the day where you actually could use it?
Oh, that's a great question. Because there was also a pandemic going on and I was practicing alone. It took me a while. So the day I said, I'm going to get digital pathology, that was in September of 2020. And I set myself a deadline to December of 2020 to choose my technology. And I stayed on track and I chose it and I made my purchases by the end of 2020. I got all of the technology, you know, the following month. So January 2021. And then the easiest thing to validate was, I think the thing I validated most quickly was frozen sections. I think that that one went easy because I was able to use a lot of archival material. And I ended up validating that one first because of my need to kind of get out of the hospital.
Mm-hmm. That was your most narrow bottleneck, I think.
Yeah. And I was validating concurrently the live view, which is living on our Rose camera in the hospital. Mm-hmm. It's on a cart that goes to cytology.
I need to go to one hospital one time and make a video of how they have mobile digital pathology on the microscope driving it.
I say it took me about 9 months to get all of the validations just completed with the data and all the scanning and just, you know, reviewing everything, submitted it all to the state. And I was using it even before I heard back from the state. But the state, you know, chimed in, I would say 6 or 8 months later about that. So it took about a good year of validating, but I was a little bit constrained just in my situation, just to be able to get everything done.
Yeah, you were on your own.
Also please. For the Rose, the
That's
on-site
a success.
Suite. Yeah. The on-site ask suite took me a little bit longer to validate as well, because the way we chose to validate it, since it was a live view, was, you know, in real time, just kind of using it first and then doing our normal process and seeing how well they compared. So we had to wait till we had enough cases to be able, and that took a few months to be able to get enough cases to compare them. So we did the validation, submitted it, and it's been great. You know, it's definitely liberating to be able to use the technology. I like using it. I'm getting used to, you know, seeing the images. Some images are easier than others to see. I did decide at one point that I didn't want to do huge excisions for subtle melanomas or subtle melanocytic lesions. I didn't want to use the digital for that, for, you know, like multi-slide cases, at least the way that I have it currently set up, because it's not integrated into the EMR. It's not perfect. But for small biopsies, the basal cells, the frozen sections are fine. Everything looks very, very good on it. We had some trouble validating the special stains because we were having it took us a little while to overcome that hurdle because the scanner was focusing in the plane of section where the marker was, instead of on the tissue.
Oh, okay.
And so we ended up having to erase all of our marker lines on our slides and, you know, rescan all of those and try again. And that worked to be able to do that. So
marker lines, like with the pen?
Yeah, like with the Sharpie, dividing the area where the controls are versus the tissue.
Oh, okay. I understand. See? Yeah, those scanners. So you need to be vigilant about these things that like are so obvious for us, but then a device doesn't really distinguish.
Right.
So you've been doing this for 3 years. Let's say you wanted to go one step further. And let's imagine budget is not a constraint. What would you add to your digital pathology arsenal, like to make it even more liberating, increasing the access to patient care? What would be the next thing? And it doesn't have to be, you know, a specific device, but like a use case. Which use case would you take under the digital pathology umbrella?
The two next steps that I think are most critical to accomplish would be interoperability with the medical record system and higher throughput scanning. So I think that I would like to get one of those, you know, larger, fancier scanners that is able to do, you know, all the GI biopsies or whatever. I think high throughput scanning would be very nice. And interoperability with EMRs is absolutely critical because I think that if I were integrating this into my daily sign out in a way that, you know, enables me to maintain efficiencies and actually, you know, read multiple slides in a day, not just, you know, a select few. I would want to be able to click on the image and know that the image that I'm clicking on is the one that's with that case. I'd like to open up the report concurrently with it and to be able to dictate into the report. And so that's my dream. And that's actually what I'm working on next is the interoperability in the EMR. So I'm hoping this will work out. It's challenging when you don't really have a big budget. So
how are you approaching it? Are you looking for some third party solution? Are you trying to do like custom coding? What's your approach to that one?
It's one of those things. So we have an opportunity in that our hospital system is changing EMRs. And so, you know, we're moving to like a more modern medical record system than we've had before. So there's lots of opportunities with that. And, you know, with my informatics background, I'm very heavily invested in the EMR, you know, getting it, making sure that it's very functional and it works well for all the users and that it's configured properly. And one of the things that I had been looking into that with that is, you know, digital pathology and the way it integrates into the EMR. The EMR, it doesn't, you know, at this stage in the game, it's only interoperable with the FDA approved vendors, the big expensive scanners that, you know, I don't have access to. So this is one of the kinds where I'm trying to work with Smart Media to I'll see if we can integrate their product into it because it was a little more budget friendly for me and for my hospital. So I'm hoping it'll work. It's, you know, it'll be a first. So if it works, it'll be very exciting. But it's new territory.
Oh my goodness. This is amazing. So, okay. This is the ideal world where everything is integrated. How does the day-to-day practice look right now with those parts of your workflow being digital pathology? Most is on the glass. You do it both from the hospital and from home, depending where you're located. And where does the digital pathology, how do you work with images?
Yeah. So for me right now, I basically, since there are two pathologists there, if one of us is in the hospital and there's a frozen section or rapid on-site assessment, or if I'm in the hospital and my dermpath cases are there, or, you know, a courier can bring them here to my house, then, you know, my preferred workflow is glass. it's easier for me. And the other pathologist, you know, feels pretty much the same way. There are times of day that we like to make ourselves more available to the radiology staffing, often on the peripheries of the day when our normal histology, like when we're done with the glass, we have no reason to be in the hospital other than to be there for, you know, the frozen section or that radiology procedure. And in those instances, we heavily rely upon the on-site adequacy assessment. So what'll happen is, you know, there's an early morning procedure or a late afternoon procedure, and the pathologist is not in-house. The cytotech will go up and do the rows, send us a link via the PathoZoom camera. We'll log in. We look at it just like it's a movie. We watch, like, I'll just watch it on my iPad, you know, say, yeah, that looks good. Yeah, that looks hematopoietic, you know, send some for flow, or, oh, there's some, you know, neutrophils in there, let's culture it. Or, oh yeah, look, that looks endothelial, let's get a cell block, you know, all the traditional rows that we're doing, triage. And so that's been great. And it's a real, it was a real appealing feature when I was recruiting for my other pathologists.
You know, I could say, listen, would be for me if I was looking for a job.
Yeah. You know, when it's getting later in the day and you want to go home and have dinner with your family, you can do that.
Pathologists because... like doing that too.
Yeah. We like to do that. And, you know, it's that waiting for a frozen section isn't going to stop you because so mm-hmm. I very much enjoyed doing that because, you know, the ORs don't always run on time. And a lot of the cases that we get frozen sections for, most of our frozen sections are plastic surgery cases. So they're not mm-hmm. as, you know, critical as maybe some other cases. And so if more, you know, pressing cases come in, the plastic surgery ones get pushed. So oftentimes, you know, we might be seeing those later in the day when we're done with all of our routine work and we have no reason to be in the hospital. So
do they like text you and say, hey, open your computer and scan the code?
They'll say, hey. So for the frozen sections, basically the workflow is the technologist who is preparing the frozen section will scan the slide, you know, give me a call or send me a text and say, hey, we just started scanning the slide. It should be uploaded in a couple minutes. And then I log in to the, you know, on the iPad, no matter where I am. It's, you know, very easy to always have the tablet with you, you know. And so I could be out to dinner. I could be in the dentist office. It doesn't matter. You know, and I can take care of that frozen section, you know, as soon as it uploads, call the surgeon, let him know what I'm seeing. And then it's just done.
Perfect. You know what I did recently? I just got the smart media camera and I had a lecture for non-pathology students about pathology data. And I did a demo for them and let them guess what slides I had on the stage. And I just had them scan the QR code. And of course, the first thing that they started to do is draw on it and annotate and like draw circles and hearts. I'm like, that's at least interactive. Good teaching tool as well. So that was fun. Beth, you are working with community hospitals. Mm-hmm. How did they react to this new cutting edge tech? And like, what was their reaction to you proposing this going digital? Or maybe did you do it together? How was that when you suggested?
I have a very supportive hospital environment. So administration gets it, especially I think COVID really got us to a point where we were understanding, you know, utilizing technology to extend us and to be able to, you know, we were used to doing Zoom meetings where, you know, we're sitting in our homes and, you know, babies walk into the room and climb up in people's laps and, you know, dogs come across the Zoom camera and cats are walking all over. And, you know, we got used to that. We got used to doing, you know, our tumor boards now are all Zoom. You know, the idea of using technology to be able to extend the resource, they saw what working alone was doing to me. They saw how hard it was. They saw how hard the recruitment environment was. They saw how difficult it was to recruit for other specialties as well. So, I mean, I think that administration gets it as a tool. And they're also very supportive in trying to help me with my crazy scheme of trying to become interoperable with the medical record system. So I think it's very helpful to have a supportive hospital environment. They didn't have extra money to throw at it, but they knew that this technology would help me extend the resource so that I could provide more services. You know, mm-hmm. I could say, okay, listen, we can have frozen section hours, you know, that are longer because I'm available, you know, mm-hmm. I'm more available, you know, like I can't be available if I have to go to this hospital and we don't want to limit procedures. I never want to be the rate limiting factor in a procedure. And so I think that, you know, showing them this allows me to not be the rate limiting factor is good for hospital, you know, throughput and bottom line and patient care and all of these things too. So the hospital reacted pretty well. I think It's sometimes a little challenging with the frozen sections because it does extend the turnaround time a little bit for me since I am using whole slide imaging. So they're not, you know, they're used to being able to have the slide on the glass, have the instant answer. Now there's a, you know, a slight delay of the few minutes that it takes to upload the image. And And I think sometimes the surgeons who, you know,
I don't think they belong to the most patient group of professionals either.
Yeah, they're pacing back and forth. And so I think that there's, you know, it's, but I feel like once people get used to it and, you know, once surgeons are coming in that have seen this in use for their entire careers or have seen, you know, me using this for the my entire career or my entire career that they've been with me, then they'll just see it as normal. And so I think that, you know, over time it becomes, people get used to it. So the technologists like it. The technologists in the laboratory love having tech that, you know, that it's even though it's more work for them to scan stuff, they see what it does. They see that it extends the reach and that it, you know, makes things easier and allows for, you know, allows for other use cases as well. We're using it now for tumor boards. You know, we've been looking at how can we use this to save money with our send out costs. Can we scan the images to the place, the hospitals where the patients are going for second opinion rather than, you know, FedExing slides and tracking numbers and, you know, things like that. So I think that they see that there's possibilities with it. And also technologists love technology, right? So,
right. They're technologists.
Right.
But I was not, see, I recently only learned about this requirement. And then when somebody's going somewhere for second opinion, the slide and the specimen the diagnosis was made of has to go with them because their pathologist has to confirm.
Right.
And I learned it in the context of doing this digitally instead of sending glass because sometimes it would take longer to ship the glass there than to bring the patient.
Yeah. And it's very expensive because, you know, you have to make sure that there's tracking numbers on these specimens, that they are good, that they go quickly. Sometimes, you know, we're sending them overnight. And that can get very, very expensive, especially if you're sending to multiple different hospitals every day, you know, which we do because patients go, you know, all over. So I think that there's definitely, it could maybe even help offset some of the costs of purchasing the technology if you can, you know, use these as justifications as, you know, this is going to ultimately help us in the long run. And I think the real justification is the pathologist resource because we are the most scarce, you know, it's a very challenging recruitment environment. You know, it's now that people are kind of used to having a little more flexibility with work, people are demanding it. And so if we can help provide that, then, you know, if there's technology that can support us in that, then we should definitely be exploring it. And I hope we get there. I mean, the radiologists in our hospital are 100%
remote. They do that, right?
Yeah,
they've been using the same rural area that you are.
Yeah.
Like, what's the deal? Pathologists can have that too.
Yeah. And I feel like radiologists are pretty far ahead of pathologists in the digital landscape.
Yes.
I feel like they've been digitizing things for much, much longer. And so, I don't know, maybe in 20 years, we'll be at like the radiology level of normalization of this technology and adoption into our daily lives. But it's exciting to be on the leading edge of it and to be, you know, adopting it in early and innovative ways and trying to mold it to meet my needs and meet my practice. It's very satisfying to accomplish it when it works. So
your practice owns all the tech and you basically have it where it needs to be used.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Understood.
And I needed to do it that way because one of how rapid I my timeline was and how quickly I wanted to move. You know, I wasn't going to be able to wait for capital cycles and apply for things. And also, you know, the hospital environment, they have so many priorities that are competing. This was my, you know, number one competing priority. So I knew that if I wanted to make this happen, it was going to have to be my practice that ponied up the capital for it. So that was my reasoning for it. And but yeah, it's been working out. The technologists are the ones who are truly, you know, doing all of the scanning, using it in the day-to-day. And I'm just sort of the end user beneficiary of it.
I think it's extremely empowering that you could, like you say, okay, that was my priority and I did it. I chose what I needed to choose. And I brought it to them. They said yes, and we can now do it. Because, you know, you're also in the position that you're working with multiple institutions. So you're the driving force. But I think this story is basically empowering others in your position and others who work independently. Hey, we can be the drivers of this. We don't have to just like say yes if somebody offers this to us. We can consider on our own if it's going to bring more business into the practice, if it's going to increase the access to care, if it's going to increase the flexibility of our life. And if the answer is yes, hey, let's budget and let's do it. Like,
absolutely.
I think this is so cool.
Absolutely.
I think it's super cool. Yeah. So if someone else was in a similar spot and was thinking about getting into digital pathology, what's your advice? Or like, what are the traps that they should avoid?
Yeah.
Or I don't know, something that maybe you would do differently right now.
Mm-hmm. So I think compliance reasons scare a lot of people. I think people are very mm-hmm. frightened of technology that's not FDA approved. I think people find that it's that's a barrier, and it shouldn't be. People should be able to access the non-FDA approved technology. You're going to have to do the same validation anyway when you're internally True. Validating it. And the College of American Pathologists gives you really good resources. I mean, they basically tell you, you know, step by step what you need to do in order to produce a validation that's considered acceptable, which is, you know, it's just like any other laboratory test, right? So if you just approach it like any other laboratory test, I think that just knowing that there are options out there that aren't FDA approved, and that the validation, the internal validation that you're going to have to do is going to be exactly the same, whether it's FDA approved or not FDA approved. So really, you know, like if you think the technology is good, then it's good enough, right? Because
as a board certified pathologist, right. decide that you can do diagnosis on yeah. this and, you know, compare it to whatever CAP says. It's, I think it's 60 cases yeah. that you have. Yeah. Anyway, then that's what it is, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's a huge thing, because I remember, you know, very early on, you know, when I would tell people about this, they'd be like, but, You know, you're going to get in trouble with the regulating bodies and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, I don't think so. Like, it's, you know, like they give you paths to do, you know, laboratory approved tests in the state, you know, like I followed it and the state said, okay. And so I think it's, you know, it's definitely, I think people consider that a barrier. And it's probably just because, you know, not a lot of people are doing it, you know, the way I did it, and it's just sort of an individual mm-hmm. who is just needs it to function.
Yeah.
And so I think just sort of if you have that need, like one, overcome that barrier. And then I think that the other barriers that people tend to have would be definitely the financial barrier, and also the barrier of making sure that your hospital administration or whatever the, you know, administration that you're working with is on board and can provide, you know, technical resources and is supportive of the technology and agrees that it meets, you know, HIPAA compliance and that, you know, data privacy standards and all of these things that are out there, you know, making sure that you have a supportive environment from that perspective to be able to meet those barriers, I think is also pretty critical. There was at one point my access to the data platform where the images were stored was blocked, because this was right when Russia invaded Ukraine. Then and the hospital decided to block all all European web
Smarter Media is from Germany, like
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So Smarter Media was blocked, and you know, it was one of those things that took me a couple days to work through mm-hmm. with my IT staff. Like, no, this is, they're, you
it's
know,
safe.
They're not going to start
to do my
free,
job.
You know, like, it's Germany. It's okay. You
know, like, oh my goodness.
Oh, but yeah. So things like that. Just evaluating things and keeping it moving forward, and just I would say, I'm very satisfied with the technology I purchased. It works very well for me. It meets my needs. And it definitely gives me sort of a foothold into the field that, you know, makes me ask more questions and makes me think of, you know, what we're going to need the next level to do and what the next level to meet. And it's just, I'm approaching it very iteratively. And I think that that's another thing too, is I would recommend for people approaching it iteratively. I can't imagine trying to dive in and completely redesign my workflow. I think that's another thing people get scared of. They're like, oh gosh,
yeah,
you know, like I love my microscope. I love glass, you know, like I don't want to move away from that. But, you know, if you don't, like most of my work is glass. The digital stuff is just the icing on the cake. and I can
see. And that's okay, right? Because, yeah. You know, maybe not now, not so much anymore, but a couple of years back, it was like hospital going digital, all full digital, full, like no glass anymore, everybody on the screen. And people who like don't have the luxury of having an institution or like having a dedicated group coordinate that and coordinate the phasing out and then just going to digital think it's not accessible to them. Mm-hmm. And that's not, you just use it iteratively and in a different way. So Beth, if you decided, okay, I want to grow my practice, would digital pathology be a tool that would help you grow it, like have another person or?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And in fact, like our hospital system is looking at affiliating with another hospital system. And mm-hmm. that other hospital system has had an extremely difficult time staffing their anatomic pathology lab. They have a hard time staffing pathologists. Same thing, you know, recruitment environment. Mm-hmm. It's also mm-hmm. a very hard environment to recruit technologists, histotechnologists, cytotechnologists. It's very hard to get all of these, you know, all of these things in place. So I can see a future where we are, you know, consolidating resources for anatomic pathology for multiple institutions in a centralized environment. And using the digital pathology not only to share cases amongst pathologists, but to be able to do, you know, the frozen sections, the on-site adequacy assessment, even just daily sign out. I think if we can get to a point where we've got high throughput scanning and good interoperability with the EMR, I can see a future, you know, especially if we're expanding and growing, and that will help normalize the workload. It will help people be, you know, working at the tops of their licenses and be more efficient to be able to work from anywhere. And it'll be attractive to recruit pathologists if we can tell them they can work at home, if they want to work at home. I think that that's, you know, giving people that sort of flexibility, I think would be the next steps, is the higher throughput, the interoperability with the EMR, and moving even more toward incorporating it into daily routines and sharing across geographic distances. I mean, when you're in a rural environment, it's you know, you've got a lot of space between hospital.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. And not everybody wants to come and, you know, work in a hospital in a rural area. And this is amazing. I love your story. I love very much how empowering and how, like, you just did it. And that always gives the sets a super cool example and shows that it can be done. You don't have to wait for anybody. If you need it, just do it. There is a way to do it without like going out of business. And you can serve more patients, and that there are budget-friendly tools that can unblock the bottleneck.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Thank you so much for joining me, and thank you so much for telling my digital pathology trailblazers about how you did it. You are a true pathology trailblazer.
Oh, thanks, Alex. I appreciate the opportunity. I love the technology. I love sharing it. The more of us that are out there doing it, the better it will get.
Yeah. And then, you know, those who come after, that's going to be what they see. That's going to be what they're used to. And there's not going to be any there's not going to be so much fear. There's not going to be so much misunderstandings, because that's going to be what they step into when they start practicing.
Yeah. And the barriers will go down. The hospitals will want to adopt it because mm-hmm. everybody else is doing it. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Thank you so much. And you have a wonderful day.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you so much for staying till the end. I felt this episode was really heartwarming when a person, a pathologist, a female pathologist from a one-person practice can help, can go digital and can help more patients than she would without those tools. And if you want to check two of the tools that Beth was mentioning, the Grandium microscope and the Smart InMedia Live View camera, I will have them linked on the screen here or here. You can check out in more details how those tools work. And I talk to you in the next episode.